Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Welcome back. Good to have you on board here. We're live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. In this hour, you're going to hear from Eddie Olczyk, who is on the game tonight for TNT. Oilers and the Panthers, game one of the Stanley Cup Final. Also, Matt Youmans on the program with some best bets out of him. Here, Jeff Seeley, typically on Tuesdays at 5 Eastern, this week Wednesday at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific. Talk best bets in the RBC Canadian. You can follow him on X. He is at Cupmaker Jeff, and he's on the Progressive Guest Line. Well, you did it again last week, Jeff. You pointed out on this show that Scotty and all your models, I mean, he rated so far like head and shoulders above the rest of the field, that you wanted him to win, but also with parlays, and you recommended him with the Pacers' money line that night. Mm-hmm. They were playing game four against the Knicks. They got it done, so you won that again. These numbers on Scotty are just nuts. You look ahead next week to the U.S. Open, he's like plus 250 at some spots.
Yeah, no, you're right. And frankly, I'm not going to bet that. I'm not saying he can't win the U.S. Open, but I would honestly take Rory or Bryson at a higher price in the U.S. Open. And again, same thing. If I were going to bet Scotty, I would parlay him with something else. I'm going to take a similar approach this week with Rory. Honestly, guys, I mean, Rory, it's very similar. Rory grades out so much better than everyone else that it's kind of a similar situation. Let's say for argument's sake that you like Oklahoma City to beat the Pacers in the series. Maybe that's how you play it. I'm not going to fade my Pacers, but if you wanted another way to play the Pacers, actually, too, you could look at boosting your Pacers series price with Rory. But I think it's going to be really tough to beat Rory. I think it's going to be Rory or Oberg this week. I know that's not a necessarily hot take, but certainly think that Rory's price is justified and wouldn't be surprised at all to see him win here at even plus 450 or $5.
Okay, so what unique way are you going to attack it?
Yeah, so Say that one more time. You cut out.
How are you going to play it? How are you going to look at here with the plus money?
Yeah, so I'm going to play Rory plus 450, and I'm going to play him with the Pacers to win the series. That's the way I'm going to play it this week.
Okay, I got that. Now moving forward, now with the top 20s, sure. What are you going to do now with top 20s?
So this week, guys, I've identified five guys that I think are really good plays as top 20s. I actually bet them all first round leader. They've combined for 8 first round leader wins or ties over the past 12 months. So I got five guys I'm really interested in there. The first one's Ryan Fox, 3 top 20s and a win over the past 90 days, which isn't too shabby at all. And he's done it with consistent ball striking, really not struggling any one area outside the Valero. So he finally broke through with his first tour win at Valero a few weeks ago, as I mentioned, and I expect another strong performance. 7th at the RBC last year, albeit a different course, but he's played well north of the border. There's no reason to not like Ryan Fox this week. I bet him plus 225, top 20, and first-round leader. Another guy who's maybe the easiest guy to cheer for in all of golf, coming off his brain surgery, is Gary Woodland. He's plus 230, top 20. And there's a lot to like about him this week. Since mid-January, Woodland has 5 finishes inside the top 25, including an 11th place finish at the Charles Schwab last week. His putter has been popping great lately. 7 strokes last week gained putting, and nearly 9 strokes putting when he finished runner-up in Houston late in March, where he tied the course record, shooting a final round 62. So Woodland's always been a good ball striker, and he's always had an awful short game. That really shouldn't hurt him here. I think he's a great play to keep rolling and finish inside the top 20. And then third guy, right, guys, my guy Jake Knapp. I play him all the time. He's plus 260 this week, top 20. And another guy is easy to root for. We remember in the players, he came off to a really hot start, was first-round leader there. Would love him in the first-round market this week again. Can bomb it off the tee. Irons can get hot like we saw during a stretch from January through March where he gained with his irons and 8 straight. His putter can get really streaky. I mentioned the players. He gained 9 strokes putting there. So like Woodland, Knapp isn't great around the greens, but I don't think that's going to be an issue this week. So I love his driving distance and long irons. We're getting a great price on a guy at top 20 in what is not a super strong field.
Okay, there you go. A bunch of guys in that range. How about if you work your way down the board a little bit more, but you want to concentrate on top 20s like plus 260 and plus 280 this week?
Yeah, guys. So Nicholas Norgaard over the past 24 rounds leads the field in driving distance. It's going to be wet, so carry distance is going to be a bigger factor than normal. Couple that with the fact that he's 12th in proximity from outside 200 yards, and you've got a guy who popped as the top overall player in my first grade model that I mentioned every week where I just used two or three stats. And it was interesting, guys. For the first time ever, I tried using AI in my handicapping this week. So I used an AI tool, and I entered a bunch of data in an AI tool and had it spit out a result for me. And he was the guy that the AI picked as well. So I thought that was interesting. Won the British Masters in 2024. Tons of experience in Europe. Now we're getting a chance to see him more regularly on tour. Massive bomber off the tee. And while his irons haven't been great, it's mainly his wedges that he struggles with. His long irons have been solid. So if his wedges are at least average this week, I think we can find him inside the top 20. You can find him better than plus 250. And lastly, Rico Hoey, we backed him a few weeks ago in the first round leader markets. He almost got there. Extremely strong off the tee. And when his irons are clicking, very, very strong top 20 candidate. Horrible putter, which shouldn't be a factor on these very flat greens. So I'm not that worried about that this week. We've seen him as high as 11th in the Houston just 2 months ago. Lots of like about him this week. And one thing I will mention, guys, as well, on the first round leader markets, some books offer each way betting on the first round leader, where you can bet the first, say, five places or so in the first round leader markets, which I think is another really cool way to bet this. So shop around and find some interesting first round leader plays. But I like all those guys in that market.
You can also bet first round top five, top 10, and maybe even beyond that, some books as well, which I really do like. And this is something too that you've talked about in previous weeks. I think not last week because you like Scotty so much, but you know the fear of him winning any tournament is obviously that exists. And this week with Rory being evidently head and shoulders above the field as well. But how about winner without Corey Connors, Ludvig Åberg, Rudy McIlroy, and Shane McIlroy? That's up at various books.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at DraftKings right now. You're right, and the prices are obviously cut down significantly.
Uh-huh.
But what's interesting, though, Mitch, you're right. I mean, you could look at a Sam Burns there at 20-1. Robert McIntyre has had success up north at 20-1. There's some guys like that I don't mind. But honestly, if I were going to take a swing on some of these guys I mentioned, especially Norgaard, he's a guy you could find. I'm looking this up right now. You can find him he's going to be – he's 55-1 in the winner without market. So is Jake Knapp. So all those guys are going to be in the 50-1 range in that winner without. Would not shock me to see one of those guys, especially Ryan Fox, finish highly in this event. And 45-1, I think that's worth taking a swing.
What's the talk back there? And how do you feel about your Pacers in the finals? And if this feels like it's just it'd be a monumental upset that your 5-1 series price.
Yeah, I asked Sherman when this price first came out, and he said it's the second biggest underdogs, I think, in 20 years or whatever it is. One thing, guys, I mean, we've been an underdog for most of the playoffs, and I think it's going to be really interesting if the Pacers steal the first game. They've stolen the first game,
yep.
I think, every series so far, and if they can win the first one, who knows? So I actually bet them to win 4-2. I got it at 15-1, so I think that was an interesting way to bet it because, if they win the first one, who knows? Obviously, OKC is a super tough team. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I am a little worried about the Dort and Halliburton matchup, but I'm hoping that I think Carlisle's a great coach. I think he'll put together a good game plan. I think we'll be ready.
We had a beat writer on who covers the Pacers and the Fever yesterday, and I asked him if now was the time to come in and bet Caitlin Clark to win the MVP because she was still posted at plus 450, obviously sidelined for a couple of weeks here, and that game one they won last night. They covered, yeah. But game one without her was absolutely just an embarrassment, and they were lost without her, and they lost to the worst team in basketball. And the next day or 2 days later, that team, Connecticut, lost by 50 to the Liberty.
Yep.
He actually said no. He said he would not because he feels that strongly about Collier and how good the Lynx are, which is all true. What do you think about that?
I think she is the most valuable player to her team. I don't think there's any doubt about that, right? And I think it'll be interesting to see how the voters will look at that. I don't mind her at that price. And look, the Fever have drifted back out to plus 450 in the futures markets, right? We saw them as low as $3. So they've drifted back out that far. I think that's just another way to look at it because I think if they get in the playoffs, which they likely will, again, they've got to stay healthy, I think they can make a run as much as anyone. And this – when Caitlin Clark's playing on the road, it's just there's very little home court advantage for whoever they're playing in the playoffs. So I actually like the Fever. I still like their futures price. And I think Caitlin Clark is clearly the MVP of her team, because you're right, they definitely can't win without her.
All right, buddy. Follow him on X. He is at Cutmaker Jeff. Jeff Seeley joined us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Stay hot. Good luck to your Pacers and also with the golf bets again this week.
Thanks, all. Take care.
Thank you. Well done. Looking forward to next week, U.S. Open. And next week, we hit the road, Omaha. College World Series live June 12th through the 14th, right from Rocco's, the iconic home of the Jell-O Shot Challenge. Catch Money Moves and us live from Omaha. Special Saturday show, 9 to 12 in the morning, local time. We'll bring you the sights, sounds, and best bets from the tournament. If you're in the neighborhood, stop by, say hello. Omaha College World Series, June 12th through the 14th, NBA Finals, NHL Finals, U.S. Open. Going to be great. See you next week.
I have prices for the semifinals at the Men's French Open. We have prices for the Women's French Open. They're all up. For those of you just tuning in right now, Novak Djokovic defeated Zverev a little bit earlier here, probably about 30 to 40 minutes ago or so. He beat him in four sets. He is now advanced to take on Jannik Sinner in the semifinals. And Alcaraz has been so good. He's in, oh my God, the number on Alcaraz. We will tell you what those numbers are coming up. And as a reminder, what Goff was when she faced Sabalenka not that long ago on clay, it wasn't that bad. We'll tell you coming up on Follow the Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Welcome in. You're going to hear from Eddie Olczyk coming up in a few minutes, who is on game one in the entire series on TNT for Edmonton and Florida in the Stanley Cup Final. We have numbers out, Paulie, for the French Open. The semifinals are set. Djokovic won again earlier today, about 40 minutes or so ago, over Zverev. He advances to take on Jannik Sinner. Have you seen the price yet?
No. I'm going to say 450.
Sinner, then you got to bet Sinner. He's minus 275.
Oh.
Joker on the take back is plus 220.
Okay.
Alcaraz takes on Musetti. In the semifinals of the French Open, Carlos Alcaraz is minus 720.
Jeez. 650 at DK. My God.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
On the women's side, you talked about this earlier.
Oko.
Boysen?
I believe so.
Okay, taking on Coco Gauff. Coco is minus 530.
She's got a home court advantage. They're going to be that helped her today. That girl was rattled, her opponent.
The true underdog story here.
No doubt.
Okay. And in the other semis, Sabalenka is $1.25, $1.30 against Iga Swiatek. Swiatek plus 106. I made this comment earlier that Coco would be a dog in the finals to either one. I think that maybe caught you by surprise.
You said big dog.
Okay, big dog. Okay.
Yeah. She's number two.
I need to be careful with how I phrase this stuff with tennis because that's not my jam. But Coco did take on Sabalenka in Madrid not that long ago in gearing up and playing on clay court here, getting ready for the French Open. She was plus 105 in that match. She's also defeated Iga three times in a row and did defeat her in Madrid on clay. So she's got that going for her. She did lose 2-0 last year to Iga Swiatek at the French Open. So I was definitely wrong when I say, quote, big dog. But I think she'll be a dog in either way.
6 a.m. Pacific tomorrow, and then 8 a.m. Pacific tomorrow with the ladies. Looking forward to it. Should be good.
Okay, so it's nothing crazy like 2 a.m.
No, it's not. Give me something tonight. What do you think? This is tough. I got Florida in six. I'm going to take Jonathan Davis' advice. I'm not going to play Bennett Most Goes. I'm going to play Bennett Conn Smythe then. If I think that's going to happen, then that's 30-1. But
okay,
see if Canada can get it done. And McDavid finally, and I don't know what to expect for the series or tonight with the time off, the layoff. And that means first period, goal in the first 10, high scoring, low scoring, all of it. There's a 6.5 at DraftKings. What say you?
I don't know what to do with the scoring overall in terms of, because I think we're going to get a mixed bag here. I don't think that like Bob nor do I think that Skinner is going to be able to put together 4 to 7 games of absolutely beautiful goaltending. I think that we're going to get a game or two because this Oilers offense is too potent. I know that the power play, it has to be better than what it has been. If they can get back to last year's form when they were pretty much automatic, depends on, though, how are they going to call that? How are the referees going to call? Are they going to go to the box the whole time?
Huge.
I just think that they're too good offensively, and Bob, if Bob stands on his head, then he's going to win the Conn Smythe.
Yeah.
He'll win it over Bennett. And I don't see that happening, and I know that you trust Skinner, like, big time at this point, but Florida's depth is huge, and they're getting goals from everybody here.
But Bob's better, and Bob, 8 of the last 9, allowed 2 goals or fewer, and with a 1-3-4. Skinner's hot as well. This redemption story's great. Pulled after game 2 of the first round, and now 6-1 in his last 7 with 3 shutouts. The thing I love, going back since 1968, they're the 8th team to reach the Cup, despite losing their first 2 games of the playoffs. The previous 7 won it all, and McDavid averaging 1.73 points per game against Florida in his career. The damage he could do as well. But like you said earlier, I mean, last year was bananas. It was total domination by Florida, and then it flipped, and Edmonton forces the game 7, and then that's the 2-1 final, and that's the only time Skinner has lost a closeout game. Edmonton's 12-1 last 13 as a home favorite. They're 12-2 last 14 as well. But then I got the flip side. I got Florida that's won 5 in a row on the road, dominated their opponents 27-7 and 6 of 14 on the power play. I still think it's going to be all about the special teams here. Do you stay out of the box? And if they are whistle happy, which I hope doesn't happen, but if that's the case, who converts on the power play and who has a good kill? And I know our guest, Tom Gazzola from Edmonton yesterday, terrified of the penalty kill because Edmonton has the third worst kill in the playoffs this year. 16 power play goals they've allowed. They were 94% last year, best all time what they did. So that's going to be big as Florida can beat you. But Florida is the most penalized team. So it's not Edmonton had that ridiculous power play last year, not so much this year as well. If they go to the box, they have to take advantage. And you know, but the goaltending's hard to handicap. Hopefully both guys are strong, but I give the edge to Florida there as well.
You can still find +110 as we speak at National Sportsbooks on Florida to win the series. I think the right price was a pick 'em. I think where it opened up had to be the price. You had to probably, I guess, maybe lean a couple of pennies towards Edmonton because they had home ice throughout the series in 4 out of the 7 games, but to drift out like it did and to get to a spot where Florida was even +115 at some spots earlier today, that's too high. And I still think +110 is juicy enough to probably, I want to see if it goes back up though. If it goes back to +115, if Edmonton takes money here before the series starts and they drop the puck tonight, which I don't think we're going to because it's going to begin in like less about 90 minutes or so. And they're taking sharp money on Florida here today at Circa. So +110 is probably going to be the best price. Earlier in this show, Eddie Olczyk joined the program. He is on the call tonight, game 1 on TNT, and throughout the entire series. We got his thoughts on the Stanley Cup final. So the series price opened up pretty much a flat pick-up at most books, right? And then earlier today, like here at Circa, they took a lot of sharp money, Oilers were almost touching -130, and we talked to Jeff Davis here at Circa a half an hour ago, and he said he was stunned when he saw the Panthers at some books today got to +115. Your thoughts on how the series price shifted?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, Mitch, that I looked at this series, obviously, once our series, we did the Eastern Conference, ESPN did the Western Conference, and once Florida was able to take care of Carolina and you knew it was going to be a rematch. And then, you know, obviously the next night we watched Edmonton take care of Dallas. I mean, the first thing I thought of was it's a pick 'em. Like I thought absolutely, again, not knowing if somebody comes up lame, somebody's not playing. I mean, all those type of things, but I just thought flat out with the watching the teams and you look at the path, especially of Edmonton, like that's the one thing that is super impressive. Like you could argue all the way through these playoffs, you could go, LA, yeah, a lot of people thought that they could make a real, they could make a real, you know, serious run. Vegas, absolutely one of the favorites. Dallas, absolutely one of the favorites. So you look at the road that they traveled, pretty darn impressive. And, you know, when you look at Florida and you think about three straight Stanley Cups and you look at going up against Tampa, who a lot of people, and I was one of them, thought that Tampa had a real legitimate chance to make a real serious run and get to the final. I just thought at the end of the day, I looked at both of these teams and the way that they were playing. I just thought it was, flip a coin. You want to flip it, 49 times and say, okay, yeah, I would say, yeah, you're probably right in that ballpark of maybe laying a little bit, but I can make a case for both teams, and I'm expecting. Look, I'm packed for 17 days, boys.
Yeah.
So I think you know where my mind is here with this series.
Oh, excellent. Very good. So you're the perfect guy to ask, too, because you won in 94 with the Rangers, and that was New York against Vancouver. So as we go here, it's a war of attrition. Do you think the travel could play a role, and plus how much hockey they've played?
Paulie, I think it's a great point, and I think really where people might want to look ahead just a tad is so you have game Wednesday, game Friday, 1 and 2. You have 2 days in between games 2 and 3, as I mentioned earlier, change of venue. You go down to South Florida. Monday is game 3. They do not play game 4 until Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you got a 2-day bump there. So I would look at it and go, you're going to empty the tank on Monday night. Like you might play your big boys on both teams. Maybe you play them a little bit more on Monday night, knowing you got the 2 days off coming. Now, as you guys know, in hockey, you could get a marathon game where you play three or four overtimes. Like it does happen. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I would say is that after you play game 4 in South Florida on Thursday, don't ask me the dates because I have no idea what the date of the month is right now. But next Thursday, that will be game 4. There is only 1 day in between traveling from Florida to Edmonton for a game Saturday night back in Edmonton. So I think, I don't want to say maybe that's where the series maybe takes a turn, but maybe if you look at and see how the series has gone and maybe ice time a certain players, I think that 48 hours, less than 48 hours, because they're going to obviously lose some time. They're going back with an early game here in Edmonton, all 6 o'clock local starts, 8 in the East. I think that might be something to look at. So, but then after that, 2 days off travel, 2 days off travel. And then if you get back for a game 7, so I think the middle of the schedule might be where really maybe somebody takes a stranglehold, on a Monday night on game 3 in South Florida, and then all of a sudden you're playing 2 games in less than 48 hours.
Yeah,
there you go. Eddie O earlier on the show, love that guy on the call tonight for game 1 in the series. Up next, Matt Youmans, NBA Finals betting, the Lions, NFC North, and he wants to talk about fast food power rankings.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
So we get game 1 tonight, Stanley Cup Final. A lot of talk about that game in that series on the show today. If you miss any of it, you can go back and listen to the Follow the Money podcast wherever you get your podcast. Game 1 tomorrow night, NBA Finals. Thunder, huge favorites, now 9.5 at some spots. Big, big price, obviously, to win the series. And to talk about that right now, Matt Youmans joins the program, VSiN host, and he is on the Progressive Guest Line. Matt, what is going to be your betting approach for game 1 or the series between the Thunder and the Pacers?
Yeah, it's mostly for the series. I don't like to jump in on game 1s very often. I feel like you're guessing a little bit more on game 1s and you find better angles later in the series. But I'll tell you, for game 1, I did play last night at the South Point. And I know a couple offshores had the number 231.5, and I played that under for, small bet, basically under 231.5. Evan Abrams of the Action Network was on our show a couple nights ago. He's got a lot of trends on the finals, really good stuff. And if this game closes 231.5, that will be the highest total in any NBA Finals game since 1990. There was one other game that was 231, I think, that involved the Golden State Warriors about 7 or 8 years ago. But almost kind of based on principle with this high total on play game 1 under. And also what plays into that is the Thunder have been off for about a week. It could be a little bit of an adjustment for them to jump into it in the first half with that long layoff. Also, the OKC D is going to be problematic for the Pacers in this series. And I think it could take the Pacers a while to figure out how to execute their half-court offense, where they can, where and how they can find transition opportunities. Because let's face it, the defenses that the Pacers face in the East are not nearly on the level of what OKC is going to show them here. So I think a Pacers team that likes to run and get out, shoot a lot of threes, I think is going to have a tougher time finding scoring opportunities. And throughout the series, you figure some things out. And I think game one might be a little bit tougher for the Pacers. So there are some trends also to point, some really strong trends to point to the first half under in game one. And you combine all that, and I said I'm going to go ahead and play under 231.5. Now, I was listening to your show, I want to say a week or two ago, and I heard a couple of sharp basketball guys, Paulie Howard and Wes Reynolds, talking about how they thought the Pacers could take this whole thing down. Mm-hmm. And I tend to agree with those guys that a lot of people seem to be dismissing the Pacers. Like, they're just going to show up and get punked, and this thing's going to be over in a sweep, or it's going to be over in five. I don't think that's going to be the case. So how do you play it? How do you play a series when you have a favorite that's minus 700? I think that's a difficult thing to figure out. Okay, so you got to pick OC if you like OKC, and almost every sharp NBA bettor I know likes OKC. I would say 9 out of 10 love OKC, and they think it's going to be 5, maybe 6. Try to pick the exact score, exact result of the finals. OKC in 6, a plus 450 is what I bet, with a smaller bet on OKC in 7 at 5-1 odds. I'm not going to play OKC in 5 here. I'm just going to gamble a little bit that the Pacers can extend this series, and I believe they can. The Pacers have two advantages here. One is their three-point shooting. Indiana's the number one three-point shooting team in the playoffs at 40%. OKC shoots only 33.6% so far in the playoffs. That's a big edge from the three-point line. Pacers have been the second-best offensive efficiency team in the playoffs at 117.7 points per 100 possessions. So I don't think the OKC defense is going to totally lock down the Pacers. They're going to find their spots. They're going to hit their threes. And when the Pacers are very efficient offensively, they can beat almost anybody when they hit their threes. With game six against the Knicks, they shot 17 for 33 from three. And if you can shoot that type of percentage, you're going to have a couple of opportunities, maybe three, to knock off this Thunder team in this series. Also, Rick Carlisle is about as good as it gets. He's been there. He's done it. He's won it. I think the Pacers have a distinct coaching advantage in this series as well, and you can't underestimate that. You got a first-time NBA Finals coach with OKC. You've got, I believe, based on average age, OKC is the second youngest team ever to reach the NBA Finals. And don't forget, this OKC team was down big in a game to the Memphis Grizzlies in the first round. They got dragged to 7 games by the Nuggets, which a Denver team that essentially had 3 players in the second round, and they got beat by 40 in game 3 of the Western Conference Finals. So I don't think this OKC team is bulletproof, and the Pacers do have a chance, I think, to extend this series.
Incredible breakdown. Well done. 77 Blazers, I believe, the youngest team. So, yeah, you're all over it. Everything you covered there as well. Excellent. I'm on the shifting gears. I'm on the Lions win total under. What did you want to say about the NFC North and the Lions with our NFL betting guide coming out in less than a month?
Yeah, I've started working on the NFL betting guide as well. I usually focus on the AFC West first, but I've been looking a lot at the NFC North lately. And with Frank Ragnow's retirement, you're talking about an all-pro center that retires. I don't want to overrate this, but also don't want to overlook it, because the Lions have now lost 2 offensive line starters in the offseason. What's the strength of that Detroit team? The offensive line, running the ball, protection for Jared Goff that sets up everything. And now you've got 2 offensive line starters out, and really it doesn't look like any replacements ready to step in right away. So on top of the 2 offensive line starters out, you lose, it's pretty obvious, you lose your offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson, to the Bears, DC, Aaron Glenn to the Jets. I feel like those coordinators really propped up Dan Campbell, who can make a lot of dumb decisions throughout the game. Campbell might get exposed a little bit more than he's lost those 2 coordinators this season. The schedule, how about this?
Yep.
Lions, 8 of their 9 road games are against teams that finished above 500 last season. That's the most in NFL history to face eight road games against opponents who finished above 500. Those teams, Eagles, Chiefs, Vikings, Commanders, Ravens, Packers, Rams, Bengals. It's one of the three toughest schedules in the league, no matter which metric you're using to grade it. They also close on the road with two straight divisional games against the Vikings and the Bears. You know, if you add it up here, a 15-2 team a year ago, the win total is 10.5. I lean under. I haven't bet it yet, but I'm leaning under. I could see this Detroit team definitely taking a drop to 10-7. And also, I don't know about how you guys feel. It looks to me like the NFC North is pretty much up for grabs. It would not stun me. I'm not predicting it, but it wouldn't stun me if the Bears actually won the division. I think the Packers have a great shot to win it. The Vikings went 14-3, but they got J.J. McCarthy, who's essentially a rookie quarterback, taking over, and a lot of questions around McCarthy, a quarterback. So I feel like that division's up for grabs. You could see a logjam of four teams, about 8, 9, 10, 11 wins. I think the Lions probably dip to a 10-7. That's probably going to be an under for me.
Yep, totally agree. Well done. So that's coming out in early July. When can we expect the fast food rankings?
You know, that's a great question, Paul. I've been thinking about this. I've thought about not doing it. Has it run its course? Is there still interest in this?
Well,
you know, we started
this
in 2020. Huh?
Don't you dare do that. No way.
Well, there's nobody, but you're talking to the wrong person, though, too. Paulie has more interest in this than anything in the world.
I know, but I'm talking to the listeners, too, in the audience. It's huge.
You got more interest in this than I had in porn when I was 17 years old.
Oh, come on.
That's a good line. You know what? If there's still a demand for it out there, I'll probably do it. But I just kind of wondered, has it run its course? You know,
no, you got to do it, Matt. Bucks. Here's the thing. You do such a great job with it. It's like award-winning. I think that you do have to do it. All joking aside, I think you have to do it.
All right. When are you guys taking vacation in July?
All-Star Week.
Yeah.
All-Star Week. Okay, we'll try to do it in July.
Thank you.
The past couple of years we've done it in August. But let's do it in July during that time. I know you guys are going to be gone now during the All-Star break, but sometime around there before we get into the NFL preseason, I guess I'll do it. I've been on the fence, but now I don't want to upset Paulie.
Thank you, Mitch. You
made a convincing case. Or I think we'll have to bring it back sometime here in about maybe a month and a half.
Have you been to Zaxby's?
I have. I was underwhelmed.
Oh.
I didn't think it was great. Huh?
Really?
Hmm?
Okay. I'm looking at this item they have, this chicken finger quesadilla. I mean, that thing looks dynamite. No good. Underwhelming.
I didn't say that was no good. Right. I don't know anyone in the world who loves chicken fingers more than you do.
That's true.
You love the chicken fingers out the Circa pool in the cabana, and those things are dead average. And I hate to say that because I don't like to criticize anything at Circa, but those chicken fingers are not that good, and you love them.
How about when we go to Omaha? Have you had Runza?
I have not, but you guys got to give me a full report because I've had so many people say when you go to Nebraska, when am I going to go to Nebraska? I haven't been there for 15 years.
Yeah, not happening.
Yeah.
Not happening.
We'll bring some back. How does that sound? We'll be going 2 weeks.
Okay, bring it back. All right.
All right, Matt. Thank you. Good luck tonight and beyond, okay?
Yeah.
Thanks. You bet.
Come on.
Here's the thing. If his heart's not in it, he can't do it.
He'll be fine. He's fine. We sold T-shirts, for God's sakes. I mean, people love this. This is one of the biggest things we do.
Paul,
he's got to do it.
Did you pick up on his tone there?
You got to do it.
I'm awesome at reading body language. I don't think he wants to do it anymore.
Got to do it. He doesn't have to do 50, but you give me a top 20 at least. I mean, he's an animal. He lives the dream. I mean, he does it. This is his lifestyle. He eats it 4 or 5 times a day.
In Pocket Plays coming up next here on Follow the Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Determine the winner of any given college basketball game.
Someone gives you 10,000 to 1 on anything. You take it. Take it. Take it.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I'll give you 3-1 odds.
Nope.
5-1.
Nope.
10-1. You're
right. All right. Rockies get it done. Said they'd win the series, and they got the broom out today as well. Colorado sweeps the series for the first time since May 2024. They were +160, +155 yesterday, +140 today. and won a couple low-scoring games. What an embarrassment, Miami. Come
on. Good job, man.
That's bad. Okay, we'll get ready to dance tonight. Looking forward to this. No hat trick in the series, minus 190. No shutout, minus 130. Under 1.5 games go to overtime at Will Hill, $2. Panthers in 6, plus 475. Will Hill, Thunder to go unbeaten at home, 120. Under 5.5 games, minus 130. Bennett to win Conn Smythe, 30-1. And I don't know what to do with the game tonight. Go on the first 10, first period. I do lean under 6.5, and that's available at DraftKings tonight. Hope it's a long series and a great series. Which it went 7 last year. We had a great game 7, but I can't say it was a great series. There were so many blowouts.
Yeah.
What happened? There you go.
You're seeing the, did you say Will Hill and Caesars for that Oklahoma City prop?
Yeah.
Minus 120, will they win every home game?
Or it's either there or let me look at DK.
If you find that at Will Hill, Caesars, definitely let me know.
Yeah, and then one of them, Will Hill, I think, has the Thunder will never trail in the series, meaning games.
Right, okay.
That's minus 220. That's not a bad hedge if you have a Pacers future ticket. Mm.
All right, a couple of winners last night. Sandy Alcantara, under 5.5 Ks. That he had 2 in the first when we were on the air. Did you see what happened here?
I did not.
I thought for sure I was dead because he went, I think, 7 innings, 70 pitches, they pulled him. And he had 4 Ks.
Okay.
So he was super efficient with the pitch count, but they just yanked him, and they lost the game after that. And Lance McCullers, over 5.5. That number is going to be long gone. He had 7 last night against the Pirates, plus 120 and over 5.5. That got there. A couple of props that we have tonight. A pending first, SGA under 33.5 points per game as an average, and the NBA Finals. And the props that we have tonight in Major League Baseball. Going to go back with 2 more pitchers here. Luis Ortiz for the Guardians, over 2.5 walks. Here's the breakdown. Overall in the year, he's 2-6. He walks 4.55 batters per 9. He has walked a minimum of 2 batters in every start but 1. 3 or more walks in 5 out of his 11 starts, including 5 against the Yankees back on April 23rd. Aaron Judge to draw a walk tonight is about $1.60. He walked twice yesterday against Cleveland. He's walked 41 times in the regular season, 32 out of 59 games. The Yankees lead all of baseball with a 10.6% walk rate. Dominguez, Grisham, Chisholm, Bellinger, and Volpe are all players not named Aaron Judge who walk more than 10% of the time. So I'm taking him tonight over 2.5 plus 115. And we're going back to war with Zebby Matthews. And I'm going to have to bet it for a third time because it's now available. They're playing games with this one all day long. Earlier today, some books had plus 114 globally. Others were minus money. I bet minus 102, minus 106. I'm going to add more at even money here, which is available as we speak. He struck out 5, 9, and 7 in his 3 starts so far in order. His pitch count in order in those 3 games, 71, 81, and 94 as he went 7 innings in Seattle last Friday. Opposing pitchers currently on an 8-3 overrun to their K-prop against the Yays. It was 8-1, and here's, I think, a little bit of the problem with why the bet could go a little sideways, but I still like it. Ryan and Lopez both struck out only 4 A's so far in the series for the Twins. They were each at 6.5. And it's something to monitor here up in Sacramento with the warm and balmy conditions. First pitch, around 90 degrees or whatever. The heat could get to these guys. And I'll point out that the Rays' struggles against pitchers recently happened big time in domes against the Blue Jays and the Astros. But if you go back even a little bit more than that, it was still warm when they played that series against Philadelphia. All 3 Philly pitchers went over their prop in that series. And I like this Zebby kid. Talked about it several times in the last couple of starts, so I got to go over 5.5 tonight at even money.
Okay. Horse Racing's Triple Crown wraps up Saturday with the Belmont. Jeff Siegel on the show Friday. Get in on the action with our friends at First Bet. Playing the free First Bet and Beeson Belmont Stakes Pick'em Challenge. Enter your picks for Saturday's top races to win great prizes. Up to a $500 wagering voucher from First Bet. Head over to VSiN.com/Belmont to play. VSiN.com/Belmont. Suzuki, number 2 in slugging against lefties. He has a base hit in his first at bat tonight for the Cubbies. Wood Had a hit last night. Last nine games, 8 extra base hits and 12 RBIs. Getting ready to go in New York. Goldschmidt, 7 of 10 career against Ortiz. Santana, last 12, hitting .447. Ramirez hitting .398 during his 29-game on-base streak for the Guardians. And we will not see a chance with Cameron can equal at least the only pitcher to join Fernando Valenzuela to start 5 games in his career, 6-plus innings, 1 earned run or fewer. KC St. Louis postponed.
All right, very good. Mackenzie Gore's on the mound right now, pitching against the Cubs. This is in the nation's capital. This is a guy that we have targeted several times with this K-prop. Tonight, 6.5. I did not. Part of the reason why, and he's 10-2 over his prop on the year. Recent games of 8-9-9-7, 9-6, which was an under, 8-13-7-7. The guy has been, you know, one of the best K guys in all of baseball, but the Cubs strike out only 20% of the time. Fifth fewest in Major League Baseball against lefties. That number goes down to 19.2%, third fewest overall. The Cubs are also elite against lefties when you look at advanced metrics. Second in WRC+, WOBA, OPS, and top 5 in batting average. Who knows? He might strike out the side to begin this game, as that game, like I said, is underway right now. And do the Cubs have the bases loaded, with nobody out?
Yeah, 3 hits, I believe.
Okay. And PCA's at the plate right now. Did he strike out?
I don't know.
I could use a home run here from PCA, but I think he got him. That would have been a very nice way to begin the game with my MVP tickets. But I think, yep, they're going to say that he swung on that one, so he's out. You're right. Single to begin the game. They're great against lefties. We're going to find out what he's made of here. Can he get out of this one against a team that's so good?
Yeah.
This happened to him, was it 2 starts ago? 3 starts ago. I think it was a Baltimore game. 100-plus pitches in 3 2/3, and somehow he went over his K-prop.
Awesome. Great breakdown from Humans. He's right that Indiana has the coaching edge. But in Bob Valgaris, who was the number one NBA bettor in the world for years and then made a ton of money in Bitcoin, owns a soccer team, worked for the Dallas Mavericks in Cuban, tweeted this as well, about how good Carlisle is. And he's not getting enough credit and respect for taking the Indiana Pacers to the finals after they went to the conference finals last year. When he was at Detroit, and I don't remember the year this is, but he tweeted out the scores. Detroit beat the Pacers in 6 games. 78-74, 72-67, 85-78, 83-68, 83-65, 69-65. Final score. But you just see how great they are on offense, this team, and the movement and what Knicks players, especially what Hart said about what they do offensively and the challenge they present. It's a whole different sport entirely.
So he's adapted to the new modern style of basketball then.
Yeah, right.
Because of how good of a coach he is. Not all guys are capable of doing that.
Yeah, sure.
Can you imagine putting one of those games on TV tonight when you get home?
Oh, my
God. Let me go check out a game from that Pacers-Pistons series from 20 years ago to find out what it looked like. What was basketball even like? You just dump it down to the guy in the low block the whole time. He dribbles 19 times for the entire shot clock, and he...
I got to go. You're right. I got to go on YouTube and watch this.
I wouldn't even
like,
watch.
No one could make a jump shot?
It would be disgusting to watch.
How can you play a 69-65 game? It was the other thing, too, when I was watching that Celtics documentary on HBO. The year they won the finals, they met Cleveland in the second round or whatever. The games were in the 70s, too. That's Garnett, Pierce, LeBron. Everyone did the same thing, which was pack it down to the big guy, and no one could shoot. But, man, that's incredible. Huh. It's ridiculous.
Would you look at that? Back-to-back Ks for Gore now.
Oh, boy.
Got the bases loaded. He'll probably strike out the side to close it up and have 3 at the end of the first. Guy's good.
Has Skeens requested a trade?
It's going to happen pretty...
I won't blame him. I won't hold it against him if he does. They've been shut out 10 times.
Yeah.
It's 0-0 in the eighth. He makes one mistake. He loses the game. They're on pace to lose 104 games.
Yeah, the run support is just, you know.
Come on.
It's happened multiple times already this year to him where he's absolutely brilliant and nothing happens to help get the win.
Yeah.
By the way, that number, that first number on Sinner against Joker was way off, evidently. I'm seeing Sinner now up touching almost $5.
Okay.
It was 275 when it opened up.
Where that was, yeah. DK opened 380.
Holy smokes.
Now you're seeing $5. Yeah. Guy's legit. Prime time up next. Cashing out 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. after that. And buy the book 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. tomorrow. James Sullivan, Survivor Sweat, NBA Finals as well, and Lou Finocchiaro on UFC 316.